Welcome to Energy, Environment and Energy Committee, the agenda for Thursday, March 12, 2015. We're going to do a little flippage and hear Senator Marty's bill first. Senator Marty's here, Senate File 1430, the DNR policy bill with you is Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner. So welcome, Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I announced a few minutes before we started, but we're only going to be dealing with these two bills this first hour and a half. So most of the energy folks who are coming on for that left the room already, but if anyone's still here, we're not going to get to them this morning. And this is the DNR policy bill, and I'm going to have Mr. Meyer go through it because he can do it much better and more efficiently than I can.
Mr. Chairman, members for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This bill is the annual DNR policy technical bill. The bill is non-controversial at this point in time. It should be a fact sheet that was on top of your packet that will walk through the sections that are there. Then I think there are a few amendments at the desk that we need to do in order to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be.
Mr. Meyer, yeah, we're getting those together now. Is that Mr. Marty, do you want to move
sure.
those now, or you want to talk about moving those later?
We can do that now.
So
I know we have A3, 4, and 6, and I don't know if Mr. Knopf or Ms. Bronson Doyle has any more.
So we'll start with the A3, Senator Marty. Mr. Knopf, can you tell us the A3 amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer could probably do a better job of explaining the A3. This is actually requested by the department. It has to do with the underground mine and the exempting them from certain statutes under the Department of Labor and Industry, and basically describes how we're going to handle it.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, again, Bob Meyer. The amendment here we have discussed with the Department of Labor and Industry, it just clarifies that the mine shaft that brings people down into the mine is going to be authorized and be inspected and ran under federal mine codes for hoists that lift people under 30 CFR Part 57 Subpart R, and that state law relating to elevators such as operate in this building do not apply. So we have, our attorneys have looked at this language, they do support it. Just clarifies that the elevator operation and enforcement inspections at the mine.
So Senator Marty or Senator Scalzi, since I'm chairing, I would like to move this, but I don't think I can.
I can move it.
Senator Marty moves A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Senator Marty.
The A4. And Mr. Meyer, again, I think on that.
Mr. Chairman, the A4 amendment is a technical change to clarify and clean up some language that we passed last year that was dealing with the prohibition to once-through cooling systems. The first part will allow these groundwater thermal exchange devices, which do not present the concerns that we had to groundwater for contamination or consumption. The second part, subdivision 6A, just allows the commissioner to waive payment of fees for past unpermitted appropriations for these systems. We want to get people into compliance. We do not want to have to charge them a back fee to come into compliance. So this is a technical amendment our Ecological Waters Division staff recommends.
Senator Marty moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, watch that one only passed 1-0. Mr. Chair, the A6 amendment I think came from Parks and Trails folks, and DNR is okay with it. It's clarifying that trails that go through parks and trails that they can actually go through state parks. Trails can go through them and do go through them, and it's just a technical clarification of the designation.
And then Senator Marty, looks like that is being passed out. Any questions for Senator Marty? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 amendment, Senator Marty moves, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, that does put the bill in the shape that we're looking for. And now I'll just go through the bill rather quickly. As you see, if you follow through on the fact sheet here, members, sections 1, 2, 3, and 4 deal with ATV and snowmobile registration. Basically, what we're doing here is putting the onus on the purchaser rather than the seller to transfer the title. Currently, these are the only units that you have. Right now, when you buy a car, the seller has to go change the title. It's your responsibility. We want to just clarify that for ATVs and snowmobiles. A large part of the bill, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, actually 5 through 17 of the bill, deals with the change. We're striking the word listed and inserting the word designated into the bill. This just clarifies it with the processes that we use to list these infested waters. Rather than list them, we are designating them via commissioner's order. Section 16 of the bill, I should just focus on that for 1 second here. This would allow the department there's language in the bill here, actually section 15, that allows us to issue a civil citation if a person is not, if they fail to complete a decontamination of their water-related equipment or to remove invasive species from their boats by a specific date that's based on the warning. I apologize. I need to go back one section here. On page 5, section 11, this is something I want to make sure people understand. We're asking for the authority to require a person to put their boat through decontamination. So if you come out of a boat, if you come out of an infested water body, or you go through one of our wayside checks and we recognize that your boat is contaminated, we want to be able to enforce you to have your boat decontaminated. So it says that conservation officer or other licensed peace officer may order, right now it says the removal of aquatic macrophytes or prohibit invasive species from the equipment. And we're just clarifying that would include decontamination using hot water or high pressure equipment when available on site before the water related equipment is transported or placed into waters of the state. The next change in this section on 5.31, if there is no decontamination equipment available on site, this would allow us to put a tag on that person's boat or water-related equipment and give them a list of where to go to get their boat cleaned and the process to get it certified, call a CO, and we will, or another county that has delegated inspection authority, and they will inspect that boat and verify that it's clean before it can be launched again.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. We just pause for a second. Senator Benson?
Sure. Okay. I just wanted to... What are the consequences of someone not stopping to do this?
Chair, members, that's where I was getting to jump ahead to that section 15. If you look at the top of page 7, the new language on line 7.5 to 7.7, it would be a warning or a civil citation, and that civil citation in section, the next section below it, would be $250 for failing, up to $250. So they would have to be pretty egregious to receive that amount of penalty. If they just flat rate refused, then there would be a civil citation issued at that point in time. But most people understand and are willing to work with us to do that. The language we're seeking is to provide an alternative and some flexibility for a person if their boat is contaminated, to have them, rather than try to do it right on the spot, to go to a place and get this done. With the county AIS aid that the legislature has implemented and is being fully implemented throughout the state, there are many more decontamination sites and availability throughout the areas where these infested water bodies are located. So we feel that there's ample opportunity for a person to get their boat decontaminated, and this just helps us tell them where to go and how to do it.
Senator Benson.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, so somebody's leaving the lake. A conservation officer believes they have a contaminated boat. The person doesn't want to stop to get their boat sprayed off at that point, get it decontaminated at that point. So then the boat's tagged. What does that mean when you say a boat is tagged? I'm not familiar with the term.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Benson, so the language on 5.31 to 3.4, so we would, it may include tagging the water-related equipment and issuing a notice that specifies a time frame for completing the removal or decontamination and reinspection of the water-related equipment. So other states would adhere a metal clip between the eye of the boat and the crank where the boat would be launched from. We're talking about putting just a metal clip onto the eye, not tying it to the boat itself. So then providing them instructions on where to go for decontamination. This is going to be in a very rare situation. Most of the times, if you're using a boat for a day, say in Lake Minnetonka, we'll use as an example. If you pull off all the aquatic plants and drain the water, you'll be good to go. If you have a boat or a dock lift that's been sitting in an infested water body with zebra mussels for quite some time, there's a high likelihood that the zebra mussels will be adhered to the hull of the boat or to the pipes or whatever of the water-related equipment. So this gives that owner an opportunity to move that equipment to a decontamination site without getting sighted.
Senator Benson, any follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, this is kind of new territory for me, and I'm just thinking about very real circumstance where the boat comes out of a contaminated lake and then is going to go right back into that contaminated lake.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, there's already an exemption in law for coming in and going out of the same water body. So what we're trying to do is create flexibility and not provide, just create a really complex system that will prohibit somebody from enjoying the outdoor recreation opportunities that are there. And that's where the department's struggle on aquatic invasive species sometimes is. How do we provide water accesses, allow people to go in water bodies, but also educate and make sure that they know what the laws are and are trying to abide by them without increasing the risk of transportation? So this language has been worked out with our Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force, and we are working with counties to implement this and making sure people understand the law as well.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. You can continue.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just thought it was important that we had that discussion. Moving on into the bill, Section 18 clarifies that since we've combined the names of Lake Vermilion and Sudan Underground Mine State Park into one park, where the state park permit is not required to do the mine tour and also go down the hill to the Stunts Bay Boat House area. Section 19 is some language that we may need a tweak as we work on this as it moves forward. Just allows us to adopt water surface use controls at public construction and maintenance sites across or adjacent to waters for the period of time of the project, not to exceed that project, such as no wake zones. The best example is the St. Croix River Bridge that's being built. We want to instill a no wake zone during the life of that construction project, as a wake can come by and create that boom of that crane, move it out of place, cause a lot of unsafe issues for the workers and for the boaters. So we're looking for that authority and working with people on that. Another example would be the Highway 52 bridge here, down there, if there was a situation as they're installing the piers and things like that. So looking to get that approval. Section 20 is a technical correction or technical modification to the state laws dealing with the United States Coast Guard change in the classification of life jackets. So you'll see that there. Section 21 deals with that as well. Section 22, again, we're trying. It seems like we're always chasing these new equipment that are developed. Right now there's some boats that are developed that you can actually surf behind. It creates a surf behind the boat. You don't even have a rope or anything. You're actually surfing like on the ocean behind these boats. So what we want to make sure is that as a person's doing this, they have another person in the boat or a mirror, just like when you're towing a water skier. So that first change is there. And then the second change would also prohibit that the waters of the state from 1/2 hour after sunset to sunrise, person may not wake surf, operate a watercraft, creating a wake, or be towed by a watercraft. So it pulls that into that same statute. But you could still be towed by a boat and things. This is a person, not... there's some concern in the House that if you're towing a boat, if you're in another boat being towed at night, you wouldn't be able to do that. This doesn't do that. This focuses on the person. 23 deals with a technical correction to a fire training statute that we had. You can see the former language stated that the structural burn training procedures for the Minnesota Technical College System were to be our criteria. The new change is tying it to a National Fire Protection Association standard on live fire training. And that carries on to the rest of that page. The next 10 pages of the bill deal with the auxiliary forest program, which is in state statute, and I can bring up Director Forrest Bow if we need to on this. This is a program that's been in statute since the 1920s that basically allowed a landowner to enroll in the program, and then your property taxes would be reduced to 10 cents an acre, I believe. And then when you harvested the timber, there would be a harvest allotment, a harvest tax, so to speak, that would go to the county. We wanted to try to clean this up during the unsession, but it was kind of complicated. There's still four auxiliary forests that are out there. I think the last one expires in 2027. So we're getting rid of the eligibility for the program, so we don't want any more people enrolling in the program. You can see a lot of strikeouts, but the language that remains is there because there still are four contracts that the state has with these forest, auxiliary forests that are there. So that brings us to, in the bill, I believe, page 24. Page 25, actually. Section 44, which I have to be very careful how I say this because it's the Forest Bow account, and our director of forestry is Forest Bow, so sometimes they get that mixed up. So this is the Forest Bow account, and it's clarifying that the revenues in the account can also be used for special forest education and informational programs. The next section, Mr. Chairman, deals with the once-through cooling language that we amended. It says that the commissioner may issue a permit for systems in existence prior to the law that are up to 5 million gallons annually, and that's what that fee was tied to. Section 46 of the bill deals with titles examination. It's a technical change, adding Minnesota statutes 2014 for clarity. Section 47 and 48 of the bill are rulemaking provisions that codify the bill. It's language that allows us to amend our rules to deal with the legislative changes in the bill. Section 49 is a technical correction to the reviser. And Section 50 is the repealers that deal with the sections of the auxiliary forest that are no longer needed. And you can see those repealers listed in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I really think we shouldn't pass up the opportunity to have Forrest Bow come and speak to us about the Forest Bow.
Next time I get a rim shot, Senator Marty, on that. So, Secretary Bow, will you come up and talk about the Forest Bow, please?
I just think we can't resist this. Sorry.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Forrest Bow with the Division of Forestry, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I am anxiously awaiting the Forrest Bow account. I don't think that's what we're here to talk about.
Senator Weber, go
Mr.
ahead.
Mr. Chairman, he needs to be careful, though, because if they transpose a couple words, it would be the Forrest Bow disposition account. So.
Mr. Bow.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, with regard to the changes in the Bow account, we collect a very minor amount of money for what we call special products, and these are boughs that are harvested from trees and made into wreath materials. We collect about $12,000 worth of products. Some of these products, in addition to the wreath material, are spruce tops, birch bark, those kinds of things. And the statute currently says that we can only use the funding for education of harvesting forest boughs. But we want to use the funding to educate forest users for all of the products that they would harvest from the forest, whether that be properly harvesting birch bark or other forest products.
Any questions for Mr. Bow? Senator Benson.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, no question. McMahon Brothers in Ham Lake largest producer of wreaths in the United States.
Thank you, Senator Benson.
They use harvested boats.
That's good. Thank you, Senator. Senator Benson. Senator Marty, any words of wisdom?
Mr. Chair, no. I don't know of any controversy in the bill, but I appreciate your support.
Thank you. It looks like Senator Marty, Gary Lestico from the Trappers Association wants to. No, no, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong bill. Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmick.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A5 amendment, please.
A5 amendment is being passed out, or is it in your packets?
Being passed out.
Senator Osmick, you want to tell us about the A5 as we are
waiting
for this thing to be passed out?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment to allow motorized vehicles to also exist within the corridor of a specific trail. It's between Camp Ripley and Veterans State Trail in Crow Wing, Cass, and Morrison counties. This is so that we can make use of it not only for non-motorized but also for motorized uses. This was brought to me by Senator Gazalka, who would appreciate our support on this.
Thank you, Senator Osmond. It looks like Assistant Commissioner Meyer, do you want to tell us about this?
Mr. Chairman, members, this trail is currently authorized for motorized use. What we're doing is we're saying that separation of the motorized and non-motorized corridors is acceptable as needed. So where we need to separate the motorized and non-motorized uses, this will give us the authorization to do that. As we're developing the master plan, this need arose, came to our attention, and we wanted to make sure that the statutory authorization provided us that flexibility. So while it's correct that it's a multi-use trail system, it's already authorized to be multiple use. This just allows us the flexibility to separate those paths, so to speak, if we need to through the planning process.
Senator Marty, do you accept the friendly of the friendly?
It's a very friendly amendment.
Senator Marty accepts a friendly amendment. Any other questions for Assistant Commissioner Meyer, Senator Marty, Senator Asmick? All those in favor of the A5 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. We're good. Senator Marty.
I move the bill, and I don't think this has to go any other committees. State and local, it does. Okay. I move that the bill be recommended, as amended, be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government.
I'm hearing Senator Marty at Judiciary. So Senator Marty moves Senate File 1430 to be passed and moved on forward to Judiciary. All those, as amended, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Congratulations, Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking forward to the other two committees as well.
Next up, it looks like Senate File 1303, Senator Schmidt, Game and Fish Bill Summary. Looks like Assistant Commissioner Meyer is also going to be with you at the table on this or at some point. So, Senator Schmidt, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is fresh off the presses, folks. Our Game and Fish Subcommittee, or Fish and Wildlife Subcommittee, just met last night to assemble this bill. And, of course, it is a combination of technical and obsolete language deletion that came from DNR in their housekeeping bill, and also an omnibus bill that includes ideas from many of our colleagues. And so we spent four different meetings putting this together, and last night passed it out. Mr. Knopf did such a great job of previewing the bill. Maybe we could defer to him to just run us through from an overview perspective, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions or ideas that come out of the discussion.
Thank you, Senator Schmidt. Mr. Knopf, run us through.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 of the bill is something that came to us from DNR dealing with they're requesting to a broader use of the expedited rulemaking process for the game and fish rules, especially dealing with seasons and limits and such. Sections 2 and 3 deal with relocation costs and also the payment of being reimbursed for the appraisal fees to the person who they're purchasing the land from. So those two issues were also brought to us by DNR. Section 4 deals with a couple of things dealing with bait from infested waters, and it It makes several changes to make it consistent on the top part of it, but if you look on page 4, the new part of this is the ability to use a cast net to take gizzard shad that are then used for channel catfish, if my memory serves me right. And then section 5 deals with the power to prevent and control diseases. What DNR would like to be able to do under section 5 is to be able to post public accesses to active disease areas and to prohibit people from entering by posting the access. Section 6 just expands the citizen oversight committees for the Game and Fish Fund to another 5 years till 2020. Section 7 clarifies that the DNR has to maintain compliance with federal law under the Sport Fish Restoration Act and the Federal Aid to Wildlife Restoration Act. We receive a lot of money under those, and this would make it clear that any computers and all the technical stuff that they get through Minute is maintained. The commissioner pays for it, and the equipment is maintained by the agency as is required under federal law, and they're using Game and Fish money. And Section 8 and Section 9 deal with updating the department's requesting this to update their criminal procedure for arrest and appearance to deal with kind of electronic copies rather than in quadruplicate as what's required under current law. Section 10 deals with aggravated offenses, which allows them to prosecute in one county if the same person is involved in offenses committed during a six-month period in two or more counties. It allows them to choose the county for it to begin in. Section 11 begins a number of sections, and I've got them listed here on the summary if anybody has a copy of it. It's 11, 12, 15, 16, 28, 29. It's created a new license to prepare raw furs for compensation. It also includes a master fur buyer with one set of records. I won't go into detail each time we get to one of those sections. I just wanted to describe that that's something being requested by the agency, and I think there may be somebody speaking about this later in the hearing. So that's 11 and 12. And then we go to 13, and we're dealing with turkey licenses, and that's the separate selection. That's kind of clarifying that they have to live on the qualifying land to be part of that separate selection. And we do 20% under the program. We have the 20% being set aside for landowners. Section 14, that was brought to us by Senator Bach in Senate File 1020, and it deals with residents of veterans' homes. And it basically says that a resident can obtain a firearm or muzzleloader deer license, and then will also be able to take antlerless deer without a permit. Even if they don't have an antlerless deer permit, they'll be able to take it under their license, so it allows them to do that. And it does allow somebody from the veterans home to assist and not be in violation of the law as long as they do not shoot a deer. That's pretty standard language. Again, 15 and 16 dealing with the fur buyers, buying and selling. That's kind of a whole package that the department put together. Based on what they've been finding with the people preparing. They're trying to get a better handle on what's going on with the preparation of furs and the sales of furs by brokers. Section 17 deals with feral swine. It basically says that you can't possess, release, or take feral swine in the state. It basically puts a prohibition on feral swine. Section 18.
Hold on, Mr. Knopf. Senator Weber?
Yeah, just curious here. Exactly where in the state are we having an issue with feral swine?
Mr. Knopf.
My understanding is that we're not having a problem, but the concern is that other states have had many problems with feral swine. And what this does is puts the prohibition in now to try to head off any problems in the future.
Senator Weber.
And if we develop a problem with that and... Senator Rosen has one out in her backyard creating a problem with rooting through the garden. Does that mean she cannot shoot that feral swine at that point in time?
Well, Senator Senator Weber, Mr. Knopf. That's
like, Mr. Chair and Senator Weber. Well, if you look at paragraph B, it does say a person may not hunt or trap feral swine except as authorized by the Commissioner for Feral Swine Control or Eradication. So I'm assuming if you called up a conservation office, they'd be able to tell you to go ahead and take that feral swine. But you know that you can talk to somebody in the department. This was something brought to us by them, and I think that B is supposed to provide for those situations where you may or you might find one loose on your property or whatever.
Thank you, Mr.
Very good. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I better get that conservation officer on speed dial or just call Tony Cornish, Representative Cornish. He's my neighbor.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I think this is another instance where Minnesota's just a little bit separate and ahead of Wisconsin. I think they've got swine running around. Yeah. We got to.
Thank you, Senator Dibble, for the clarification. I'm enjoying this. Mr. Knopf, keep going, please.
And Mr. Chair, in Section 18, this was a bill brought by Senator Ingebrigtsen, Senate File 722, and it deals with scopes on muzzleloaders. And what this does, between Section 18 and 19, it would allow persons age 60 or over to have a scope on a muzzleloader, including magnification of the scope. It would maintain, for those under age 60, it would maintain the current law with it, where you'd have to show a visual impairment to be allowed to use the scope on a muzzleloader.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmek.
Just so that members know, this is the notorious scopes on muzzleloaders that always seems to go up into the floor and die. Senator Bach appears to be willing to allow this to happen. So those of you who are keeping score at home, this one might actually stick.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Osmek, I just add that this
Senator
is
Schmidt.
The scopes on muzzleloader provision in Section 18, it refers to those over the age of 60. So there is a carve-out here.
Thank you, Senator Schmidt. Go ahead, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 20 was brought to us by Senator Benson, Senate File 1033. And what, although there is a slight change in this, what Senator Benson's bill was requiring that the CO could only issue a warning for a first offense. This says may be punishable by a warning, so it gives some direction to the CO. And what this does, what this is you know, 5 days prior to deer season, 2 days after deer season, you're not allowed to have a gun that would be capable of take it in the outside that's capable of taking deer. During the season, only those with a license are allowed to have a gun that is capable of taking a deer. And so what this does is provide some direction to the conservation officer on a first offense. Section 21 was offered by the department, and what this does is it allows a bear hunter to track a wounded dead bear while still in possession of a firearm while they're tracking the bear. Under current law, that would not be allowed, and this would, as long as they're following the bear was taken during normal shooting hours, that they would be able to possess a firearm while they're tracking the bear. I think some people remember the situation in Pine County last fall. It's kind of related to that. Section 22, what this does is removes a permit requirement for taking unprotected wild animals with radio equipment. In current law, you know, we have the prohibition on taking any animal using radio equipment. And what this does, then there's a special allowance for a permit. What this does is just removes a permit requirement so you can take coyotes or other unprotected species with radio equipment. Section 23, again, this was brought to us by Senator Bach, Senate File 281. And Senator Bach's bill was that residents over 84 could take a deer of 86, or a deer of either sex. What this does is it brings the age down to 80, so it's still covering an 84-year-old, but it would bring it down to the age of 80. So if you're 80 or over, you can take a deer of either sex regardless of whether you're able to acquire a permit for the antlerless deer. Section 24 deals with feeding bears. It's a prohibition on placing food. And this was brought to us by the department that would to attract bears. It does have some provisions that's for people that are feeding for other animals. And if they start attracting bears and having to remove it for a minimum of 30 days. And that's, again, was brought to us by the department.
Mr. Knopf, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question. So in Section 24, this essentially says is you can only feed bears if you're going to kill them.
Senator Schmidt.
Mr. Chair and Senator Eaton, I would maybe ask DNR to come up, and this is from their technical bill, and they could provide a little context to this section.
Assistant Commissioner Meyer still around?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have staff from Wildlife Division answer their question.
Perfect. Welcome. Welcome. Please, for the tape, state your name and
answer our question, please.
Absolutely. Kathy Don Carlos, Deputy Director, Division of Fish and Wildlife, DNR. Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, yes, this section would prohibit intentional feeding of bears because of the resulting habituation and change of behavior in bears.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But you can still feed them or bait them to shoot them.
Ms. Don Carlos.
Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, yes, they could be baited for hunting. That's not excluded.
Senator Eaton, follow up. Senator Eaton?
I just have to say that I find this really offensive.
Thank you, Senator Eaton. Go ahead. Thank you, Ms. Don Carlos. Mr. Knopf.
And Mr. Chair, Section 25 on the bottom of page 13, top of page 14, that deals with it's expanding. Current law, actually, just from last year, the legislature enacted a provision that allowed you to kind of haze or chase deer, geese causing damage. This would allow it to be for other game birds also. It expands that. In Section 26.
Senator Osmond, please.
Mr. Chair, I just want to congratulate Senator Brown. He allowed us to bully geese last year, and now we're expanding it to all game birds, so now we are bullying more things than just geese. So I congratulate Mr. Bully Brown.
Go ahead, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Section 26 was brought to us by the department, and this clarifies it. It says that when you're hunting turkeys, as required in rule, you can only have guns that are legal for taking turkeys. But this also clarifies that in paragraph B on 1414 that if you have a permit to carry, that you could carry in compliance with the permit to carry law. Section 27, this was brought to us.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Benson.
Thank you. And Mr. Knopf, is this the same kind of situation that we'd have in the provision that I brought forward where if you were this only applies to people who are actively bow hunting or actively taking turkeys?
Mr. Knopf.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, this only applies to people actively taking turkeys. And under the, if I remember right, even the possession during the firearms deer season, we have an exception in there for people with a permit to carry. Generally, those guns, I mean, if a .22 revolver where wouldn't necessarily fall under those prohibited guns during that time period. Anyways, but this would allow a person with a permit to carry, similar to what we have for the deer hunting. We allow a person with a permit to carry while they are afield.
Senator Benson? Oh, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Knopf.
And Mr. Chair, members, in Section 27, this was brought to us by Senator Wieger at Senate File 1070, and it deals with trapping near a public road or public trail. It's modified a little bit on 14.27. We've got it at 50 feet from the center line, and then also further define the public road as those public roads and cartways defined in the transportation law. Includes minimum maintenance roads, and then public trails would mean that the trail is managed by a federal agency, state agency, or political subdivision of the state. So it would prohibit body gripping traps within that 50 feet of either side of the center line. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 28, that's another provision I mentioned, the fur trapping provision so is Section 29. Those are provisions that are dealing with the sales of fur-bearing animals. In the preparation of fur bearing animals, the department brought to us. Section 30 deals with taking a fisher, marten, and bobcat. It basically allows the commissioner, similar to deer and other species, where the commissioner can have a lottery system or to have, basically it says that they may limit the number of persons, and usually that means a lottery system under the game and fish laws in Section 30. Mr. Chair and members, on Section 31 on the top of page 16, there were two bills the subcommittee heard that had provisions similar. This is the same language that was in Senate File 1325, Senator Hoffman's bill. You'll also be seeing that as a separate bill, but this is the provision that allows or that requires written permission from the owner or occupant if it's a property of another person. There also was a provision in Senate File 591, Wieger, that was similar to this. And then in Section 32, we've got body gripping traps. This is just a clarification that the agency brought to us. They want to make sure that people understand that you have to check a body gripping trap every 3 days. For the other non-water set traps that are the non-body gripping, non-water set traps, generally it's every day you need to check the traps, but for the body gripping and water sets, it's generally every 3 days. Section 33 expands the users. The commissioner has a fairly quick way to change certain limits in possession, daily and size limits on Mille Lacs Lake, or basically in the 1837 treated ceded territory. And what this does is it would expand those current powers to change those limits quickly in the state-managed waters of the Upper Red Lake. This, again, was brought to us by the department. Section 34, we're dealing with the minnow license and helpers, and what it says is, and this is a way for the department to better keep track of all the minnow dealers, helpers, and everybody out there, is that they have to have an angling license to be a minnows dealer, helper, or a minnow dealer. Section 35, this deals with the cast nets for gizzard shad. We talked about a section earlier, I think it was four or five, that talked about this. This is the two sections kind of match as to how we're managing. One was in the invasive species law. This is now in the game and fish laws and the fishing chapter, dealing with the use of those cast nets for gizzard shad. 36, again, deals with minnow dealers. And what this does is it ensures that that the minnow dealer designates employees. They can change the designation, but they have to keep track. And if I remember right, they have to even report and keep it on their license who are the helpers. So another way for DNR to kind of keep track of who are all the minnow dealer helpers that are working out there. 37, that was brought to us by the agency. It deals with lifting spearing bans and northern pike regulations on certain water bodies. There was a bill a few years back to lift these on a number of lakes, and apparently my understanding is this will lift them on all but one of the lakes. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 38 allows the department to refund youth bear licenses. The legislature reduced those licenses a year or two ago, and apparently the department system was overcharging for a time, and this would allow them between the dates of, if they purchased between August 1st, 2013 and June 30, 2014, to refund that. Section 39, this was brought to us by Senator Schmidt in Senate File 1549. So this would allow for a pilot program in southeast Minnesota in the Series 300 area to allow farmers with crop damage suffered to be provided additional deer licenses that they can then pass along to other hunters. It would also require a website for that. From the original bill is there was an acreage limitation in the original bill, and there was a blank, but there was some damage limitation. But what this just says is if you have agricultural land, regardless of the acreage, and you're suffering crop damage, you'd be eligible for this pilot program. And the pilot program expires in February 28th, 2020. And Mr. Chair, the revisor instruction is just to remove the term conibear type or conibear trap because that is basically is a brand name, and removing that from the statutes. Section 41 are a few repealers, license fees for muskrat farms, bond buyer for fur buyer license, or bond requirement for fur buyer licenses, and some rules that relate to the northern pike experimental and special management waters that are also being amended in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Senator Schmidt.
I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Knopf. You did a great job helping us with the subcommittee and also with this overview today. Again, much of this was brought to us by the DNR, so if there are any questions with their language, we can certainly bring them up. Otherwise, we have a collection of member bills here, and I'm willing to stand for any questions.
So, Mr. Senator Schmidt, a couple of things. There's a couple of testifiers, but the first thing we need to do is you need to move the subcommittee report. And then we'll go from there.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the subcommittee report.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Senator Schmidt. Senator Schmidt, there are
questions from the how would you guys like to proceed? You want to start with questions? You want to hear from the testifiers and then go to questions?
About testifiers.
Testifiers. Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Schmidt, the testifiers are, of course, Assistant Commissioner Myers here. If he's not going to speak, then we'll bring up Gary Lestico from the Minnesota Trappers Association. So
we have two chairs here. Folks would like to testify.
Absolutely. If there's anybody else that wants to testify, pick a number and have a chair. Mr. Lestico, welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary Lustig, I'm an attorney for the Minnesota Trappers Association. Appreciate the opportunity to speak today to the committee members. If there are any questions as to any of the sections having to do with trapping, I'd be glad to do my best to answer those. The Trappers Association does have some specific concerns on some of the sections, and based on the very well organized way of going over this, this bill, based on the sections, I'm going to respond to those in that same fashion. So under sections 11, 12, 15, 16, 28, and 29, those sections basically deal with a number of provisions that have to do with the licensing and basically the paperwork for someone that's going to prepare fur for some type of payment that that person would now have to be registered essentially like a fur buyer and have to follow the same paper work and tracking as a fur buyer would do. It also would include within fur buyer what are called brokers or agents for various fur houses that buy fur and have auctions. So on 11, 12, 15, 16, and 28, it sets up the licensing and the requirement for documentation for those individuals that prepare fur. The reality is that typically those that prepare fur do so out of their garage. They do it for very little money. They do it to help out trappers that they know. Some fur are much more difficult to put up than other fur. And this would impose not only the additional cost on them, but also the additional documentation, which is fairly rigorous that is required of a fur buyer. Currently, under current law and rule, if a trapper brings and leaves their fur with anyone else, they have to document it with their DNR number, their address, all of the required information. If it's one of the animals, the fur bears, that requires to be registered by the DNR, so pine marten, fisher, bobcat, and otter, there's a sight tag that the trapper is required to put on that fur, and that must remain with the fur when it's at the fur prepare. So it increases substantially for people that are doing a very little amount of work with fur, the work and the documentation that they have to go through. And what we believe would happen is that those people would simply not do it anymore. The trouble would be too great. They're not doing enough. There are a few within the state that do a fairly substantial amount of fur preparation, but the vast majority do not. And all of the documentation, all the safeguards under current law to make sure that the DNR knows whose fur it is, that there's not an overharvest, are already in place. That doesn't change or enhance any of that. It's just basic paperwork. On the broker and agent, which is Section 29, what happens in those cases is there are primarily two fur houses in Canada that most all of the fur, either wild fur or ranch fur, that is produced in the United States is sold at. And that is sold or taken out of the United States through a series of brokers and agents. So every state has a broker, and then there are numerous agents throughout the state. There may be several hundred in Minnesota. And so what a trapper would do, and the bulk of the fur is sold through these organizations, Fur Harvesters of America and North American Fur Auctions. And so the trappers bring the fur to the agent, and they take it. Typically, it's in the person's garage or in a side building. They're very small individual agents as far as the amount of fur. The agent holds it. The broker comes along with the truck, picks it all up, and then it's gone through customs into Canada. It has to go through all of the clearings to make sure that the fur has someone that took the fur with a license. It has to be registered. CITES agreements, international agreements, are complied with. And all of that is done. Again, what it would do is it would take, there's slightly maybe over 100 fur buyers currently in Minnesota. This would expand that. There would be the need to be for many hundreds of additional individuals would have to register as a fur buyer, have that individual documentation. There'd be redundancy upon redundancy with no benefit other than that there's a redundant number of catalogs with this information put in it. Again, what it would do is it would just reduce the number of people that are available for trappers to sell their fur. There's very few trappers that make a substantial amount of income. There are a lot of trappers throughout the state, young people, retired people, that it makes a significant difference for them, the fur money. And this would make it much more difficult for them to find a buyer. And we would oppose those on those reasons. It doesn't increase the likelihood that anyone is going to over-harvest fur. There's not adequate documentation. The DNR, it's quite they know where all these places are. They're publicly noticed. It would just be this hardship for those individuals.
As Senator, sorry, Mr. Lestico. Senator Brown.
Yes, well, and Mr. Chair, I don't know at what point you want me to address this, but I do, the sections that the testifier just talked about, I do want to make some motions on those sections at some point.
Do you, thank you, Mr. Brown. I'll note that. Do you want to wait till we're done with the two testifiers and maybe get the DNR response, and then does that sound?
Sounds good.
Sounds fair. Thank you. Mr. Lestico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Section 27 is the provision that has to do with setting body grip traps near roads. The Minnesota Trappers Association is the organization within the state that works with the DNR and provides all trapper education. There is a requirement that before someone can trap, if they haven't previously been issued a trapping license, they have to be certified through the process before they can buy a trapping license. The Minnesota Trappers Association does stress to trappers to stay away from roads with their traps. The concern we have with the wording in Section 27, and we have met with Senator Wieger on this on other years as well, is that there are a number, what a body grip trap is a trap that is manufactured in many different sizes. And so there are sizes that the opening in the trap is smaller than a piece of toast. There are sizes that are much larger that are used principally for beaver trapping, and those can only be set in a water set so that people can't get to those sets. There's an intermittent size of traps, which are typically called the 160, it's a 6x6 opening, and a 220, a 7x7 opening. There are already provisions in current state law that puts limitations on those mid-sized traps, specifically the 220, so it has to either be set recessed in a cubby, it can't be set near bait, or it has to be elevated at least 3 feet. And that has proven very effective on having no longer having issues with incidental dog catches. And the Trappers Association has been working on this issue. We feel that there's been great strides on that. There are the majority of dogs that are getting caught, the vast majority are getting caught in illegal sets. The issue that we have with the wording in Section 27 is that it doesn't just include the traps that would possibly catch a dog. It includes traps that a dog couldn't get caught in. And those are widely used near roads, near streams, principally for mink and muskrat. The trap can't catch a dog, but yet this bill would exclude that the use of that trap anywhere because it's within 50 feet. The other issue we have is that the definition of road and trail, as it is now set out, there would be no way for a trapper to understand whether there was necessarily a road. So the issue isn't if you're on the North Shore and you're on Highway 61, that's quite obvious that that's a road. We don't believe trappers are setting their traps on that road anyhow. But if you get off the road, that road, and you start driving north and anywhere in the western part of the state, anywhere around the metro, anywhere in the south part of the state, there are numerous roads that are actually dedicated that actually are legally roads. That as an attorney, you would find those at the county recorder. But if you're on the landscape looking, you would not know that that is a road. We think there's a better definition for what would be included within road. Similarly with state trail, the bill as it now is worded would include any trail, federal, state, or county. Whether it's marked whether there would be any other way of determining whether that trail was what it is the trapper is supposed to be set back from. Trappers want to follow the law. It's the most heavily regulated outdoor activity in the state, but they need to be able to find that, and I think it's unfair that they should have to go to the county recorder and determine where these dedicated but not platted or not constructed roads are. And that wording very much concerns us because we can't tell our members how to not break that law. So that's a concern we have with that. As far as Section 30, that has to do with a lottery system that is set up for Fisher, Pine Marten, and Bobcats. So Pine Marten is a member of the Weasel family. It's almost exclusively in the northern part of the state, roughly from Duluth, if you go in a crescent, up to maybe Baudette, about in that area. It looks about like a mink. They live in the trees in older forests. Fisher are a larger animal. They're like a short-legged fox in appearance. They're much darker. They're almost pure black. Pine Marten are kind of an orangish off brown. Both of those have shown declines in population. So when the trapping season originally opened up in modern times in the mid-80s for Fisher and Pine Marten, the population peaked and has gradually gone down. These are animals that go in a cycle like most wild animals, and the population has concerned trappers and the DNR. And we've worked with the DNR, accepted shorter seasons, smaller limits. We think that is the best way to conserve the resource. If you go to a lottery system, it's unlike with hunters. Trappers go every day to their trap. And to have a lottery with the zone on it essentially keeps the trapper from, even if they pull a permit through the drawing, they just can't go because they have to go there every day. So if you get a prairie chicken permit in the West, you can go and come back and go and come back. You can't put your traps out and remove your traps. So we'd rather have the DNRs, we've worked with them, lower the limit to conserve the population. With bobcats, the population has increased drastically over the last 40 years. It's at historic levels right now, and we don't believe it's warranted to have a lottery system with the hardship that would put on trappers for the bobcat, and that is our concern with Section 30.
Mr. Lescico, if I could just, it's 1:13, and we're scheduled to be out of here at 1:30, and given the fact that Senator Brown wants to have a discussion on some amendments, and in the interest of time, I'm noting these, and we're going to try to get the DNR up here as well to talk. But if you could,
2 minutes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
One and a half. How's
one
that
and a half.
For
I'll
you?
Do that. Yeah. Thank you. Section 31 is placing snares and traps on private land, requiring written permission. It's very hard to get written permission for trappers. They talk to the landowners typically every year. Some land is leased by the state. There's no way to get permission, written permission on those. Section 32 is checking body grip traps. It clarified the language. We're neutral on that. Our understanding is it's going to leave the law in place the same. Section 40 is the reviser's instructions on conibear and the term conibear in statutes. Our concern with that is real. The body grip trap comes in many different brand names. Conibear is one of the brand names. It's the Kleenex of the body grip trap name. John Conibear invented it. The name stuck. Without having body grip trap qualified by the term conibear, that would, in state statute, result in every kind of trap being included within that particular provision or description, because traps and snares, by definition, can't hold an animal other than by gripping its body. So having the qualifier conibear, we have had discussions with the DNR on how to fix that. It has to do with this patented trade name. I've talked to the counsel for Oneida Victor Woodstream that owns the patent on conibear. They don't have a real problem with that. They were just asked by a federal judge to notice everybody that uses the term conibear. And so I think by the DNR seeking to place it in here meets that burden. But in any case, I think there's a better way to take conibear out without having all these other unintended consequences, and there would be many. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lestico. Not only does the Department of Education have an issue with paperwork, but it sounds like we have it here with your excessive paperwork and documentation. So, Mr. Schreck, please identify yourself, and if we could just do, in the interest of time, we also want to get some folks up here as well. So, thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Tim Spreck. I am here today speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Forest Zone Trappers, which is a separate organization from the Minnesota Trappers. In the interest of time, Mr. Lesko did a fine job of explaining all the legalities and the concerns that we have. We echo those concerns. We've also had some discussion with Senator Brown ahead of time on the amendments he plans to offer. And I would just also state that the Forest Zone Trappers support those amendments. And with that, I will disappear into the background. And if there's any additional discussion on the amendments legally, I would defer to Mr. Lestico. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spreck. Is there anybody from the DNR that wants to give any input? If not, Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I think we should have a little context from DNR here, and I just emphasize before we hear the amendments. This bill was brought to us; it was just introduced last Monday, and so we haven't had much of a chance to connect with stakeholders on this. We will be definitely open-minded to reaching out and try to improve this bill as we move from one stage to the next.
Julie Nolan, thanks for the reminder, Senator Schmidt. Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, DNR. In regard to the fur preparation, buying, and selling sections in the bill, 11, 12, 15, 16, 28, 29, and 41. We have been seeing some concern about the trackability and actually the, want to call it the chain of command of some fur buyers that are out there. So we're trying to get our arms around just more of accountability and making sure that we had a good process in place to deal with this. It may be too much too soon, so I think we could support working with the trappers to deal with that issue, come back next session on. But you would also need to deal with the surety bond repeal that we have in the bill. Section 97B.905 sub 3 was a bond for fur buyer's license. We wouldn't want to repeal that. I don't know if that was in Senator Brown's amendment or not. So we're willing to work with the fur buyer, the trappers associations on that, just with a greater understanding of how do we increase that chain of custody and accountability throughout the system, especially as prices rise. There's a lot of fur buying that goes on, and it's a valuable commodity that we just feel we need to have a more complete process on. In regards to the bobcat and the Fisher Martin, we do have concerns about all of those populations. I think our foremost concern is on the Fisher Martin population and the fluctuations we've been seeing on that. You know, there's other ways we could regulate that population if need be. So, you know, if the committee is going to entertain a motion, we, our first and foremost authority is to keep our flexibility to do controls on the Fisher Martin season. You know, the other pieces of it, we do understand the concerns that people have out there. As we expressed in the subcommittee as well, we have grave concerns about the numbers of dogs that are getting caught in these traps as well. And it's refreshing to see a real conversation occurring on this issue. And I think there's a little bit more work that can be done. But we're having a good conversation. And, you know, this process always brings people together to talk about all the issues and hopefully at the end come up with something that most people can live with. So we do appreciate Senator Schmidt and Senator Hoffman and the committee willingness to discuss that. We also need to make sure we're working with the trappers communities as well, because they do a great job removing animals that are causing problems to our wildlife population, our songbird population, and things like that. So it's three legs of the stool we got to try to make sure are all even and they balance out, right? So
thank you, Assistant Commissioner Meyer. Any questions for Assistant Commissioner? If not, you know, Senator Schmidt, I guess the question is out there, we got a couple stops ahead of us, and we're trying to get through this first, March 20th date. So, Assistant Commissioner, I heard a couple of options. You know, there's...
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just chime in here.
Thank you.
I understand a couple concerns came to us late here, and I understand there are some amendments. I would be happy to reach out to folks who have amendments in hand and try to work out something for an author's amendment at our next stop if folks would be interested. I haven't had an opportunity to meet with the folks who just testified on behalf of trapping and would be happy, at least I haven't had an opportunity to do that in the last week. And so if we got together, we might be able to improve this language before its next stop. Of course, I want to try to put our finger on sound policy here that you know, appeases a number of stakeholders. So if folks are comfortable with that, I would certainly be willing to do that.
Thank you, Senator Schmidt. Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Schmidt, I did say in subcommittee yesterday that I would vote in favor of moving this forward with the opportunity of having a few sections I wanted to discuss in this committee. Mm-hmm. So I hope that you're willing to honor that.
Oh, sir, Senator Brown, if you would like to offer amendments, have at it. I think that we can have this conversation last night, today, at the next step, whatever you like.
This is good. So, and this will be, you know, I think eventually we're next stop is probably judiciary. So, Senator Brown, yes. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my first section that I want to deal with has to do with the FER preparers and broker agents. Do you want me to describe? There are six sections that the testifier talked about. Do you want me to talk about each one at a group them together or one at a time? How would you prefer?
Senator Brown, Mr. Knopf.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, I think it'd be just more efficient if you just were to move all six. If you're just deleting, if you want to delete six sections, just
no, I don't want to delete all,
Senator
all
Brown.
Of them.
Well, name the ones that you want to delete or
okay.
modify.
All right.
Senator Brown.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. In sections 11, well, with Section 11, I want to remove the added language, Sections 12, 16, and 29. I want to remove the added language and reinsert the language that's been struck.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, that would, if you delete the section from the bill, that's exactly what will happen. The current law will stay the same.
All right.
And so it would go back to the way it is. Under
thank
Senator
you.
Brown.
So sections, I would move to delete sections 11, 12, 15, 16, 28, and 29.
Senator Brown, so if I understand you right, these are the six sections that you talked about early on, 11, 12, 15, 16, 28, and 29. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's all the new language for FER preparers and the broker agents.
Senator Brown, Mr. Knopf, the question is, do we have to do the repealer as well?
Well, Mr. Chair, that was Mr. Meyer mentioned that the fur buyer's bond was being repealed because of that, the added sections. And he was asking that if you're going to repeal those six sections, that you also delete the repealer.
Right, and I can't, what number is that?
Senator Brown?
Mr. Chair, members, that is on page 20. And what you would do on that one is as part of your amendment, were you to repeal the six sections on 20.1, delete sections, insert section, and then delete everything after 25, after subdivision 25 on that line, and then delete on line 20.2, delete everything before R. So what you're doing is you're deleting the repeal of 97B905 subdivision 3. That's basically what that gets you to. So you'd add that. So you're deleting the six sections plus that repealer.
Thank you. And Mr. Thank Chair, you. I will.
Senator Brown?
Yes, that's what I wish to do.
Thank you. So, Senator Brown, there are six sections plus the repealer, as Mr. Knopf has spelled out. Senator Schmidt, Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, I may have jumped the gun too quickly on giving these up, but part of my conversation I wanted to have was that we need to come back with a better process to do this for next session. So, I mean, I think we can support the language that's there, but also with an understanding that we'll work with the Trappers Association and Senator Schmidt to come back next session with something that meets our needs and also tries to address the concerns of the Trappers Association, if Senator Schmidt's amenable to that.
Mr. Chair, Schmidt. Perhaps in the future we can have these conversations before a bill is introduced and we're able to start on more firmer footing. With that said, let's delete the language. I support the amendment and we'll move forward.
So Senator Schmidt accepts the repeal of the six sections and the repealer, as Senator Brown has indicated. Are there any questions regarding what Senator Schmidt is accepting? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That ends that. Mr. Knopf, can you decipher what we just did there, please?
Mr. Chair, yes. The six sections are gone, and so is the repealer. So.
Thank you. Senator Brown.
Two more areas, Mr. Chair. Section 30, I would like to remove all reference to Bobcat.
Senator Brown would like to remove Bobcat. Senator Schmidt, Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman.
I guess my question here, Mr. Chair, is how serious the DNR is with the language they brought to us. I would prefer to have a more thoughtful conversation about why we're removing the Bobcat between now and that next stop. I can understand the impetus for removing those sections we just did, but perhaps if we're able to hold off on this one and have a conversation about that.
Senator Brown.
I'm willing to do that.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Schmidt, in the future. Senator Brown, another one?
One more.
Okay.
Section 40, Mr. Chair. I would like to delete Section 40.
Looks like Senator Brown wants to delete the term conibear because in the revisor tell eliminate. I heard that there's a copyright infringement or a pattern infringement on that, Senator Schmidt.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and committee, this has come before us in the past, and I know this is an ongoing issue with DNR and the owner of the patent rights here. I'd allow Mr. Meyer to restate DNR's position on this.
Mr. Chairman, members, we've been contacted by Mr. Unita, which is the manufacturer, the owner of the patent on this term. They've asked us to remove this term from statute. So at some point in time, we need to deal with their legal concerns that they have with us. So it's going to be in the Game of Fish Bill every year until we resolve it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Mr. Senator Brown? Senator Brown, 1 second, please. Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, I think as a technical, we were kind of getting a jump on it because there was one section that's used in the bill. If you look on page 14, lines 18 and 19, it's being stricken or conibear type trap. So what I'm thinking is that as part of your amendment, if you want to delete that section, that we would also reinstate the stricken language on 14.18 to 14.19 to make sure it's consistent with your direction.
Mr. Chair, if I could just
Senator Schmidt.
Our next stop is Judiciary Committee, and this might be a conversation that's apt for that committee. I take the concerns very seriously. We don't want to have any unintended consequences of keeping this section in here. But, again, we've got to do something on this language, and perhaps keeping this alive, at least for another stop, will allow us to continue to think on it. And, Senator Brown, I don't want to do anything that's going to lead to unintended consequences here, but I don't think the conversation is over, and it certainly would come back next year if we don't try to do something about it this year.
Senator Brown?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Senator Schmidt's. He's compromised a lot on this bill with what we've done, and I appreciate that. I'll withdraw that request.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Osmick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a suggestion on how to deal with this. Conibear may be a patented name. However, my understanding is Conibear comes from the name John Conibear, who was the designer. You could construct language that says it traps in a design originally provided by the inventor John Conibear, which gets you away from the quote Conibear type and gets you pointing to a type that was designed by a single particular person. Just a suggestion.
Thank you, Senator Osmick. Senator Schmidt, you know, last Friday believe me, they'll probably take that up in Judiciary. They had a 20-minute conversation on the word reasonable. Reasonable. So it was.
Well, Mr. Chair,
no
I think
doubt
we had a reasonable discussion here today. So,
Senator Schmidt,
I think that's for what it's worth.
Looks like there's a couple questions, Senator Benson and then Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And page 12, line 1, I'd like to amend that, delete the word may and insert the word must. And the DNR is going to have a problem with this because they want to retain the authority to have a citation when there is a violation. And so I hope we can make this adjustment in committee. Put in the more directive must language, and then as we go forward before Judiciary, work out the language that would give the conservation officer the ability to assess the situation and be able to articulate what's going on before a warning was issued.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Senator Schmidt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Benson. You and I had a chance to talk about this earlier. The one thing I would add to that is if we do follow your proposed amendment, we are changing law. And by keeping this as it is, we change law less. And that would allow us to have a conversation between now and Judiciary, determine if an improvement or enhancement in law is achievable, and maybe have an amendment in judiciary.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Schmidt, if we leave language as is, we're not changing law at all. Because they already have the option of issuing a warning, just like officers have the option of issuing you a warning when you're speeding. The problem is this isn't a speeding ticket. It's a pretty material citation, and it's based on the judgment of a conservation officer. And so what I'm hoping is that we put in strong language here so that the officer, Mr. Meyer, will come and talk to me about what kind of language we can have. Because right now, Mr. Chair and members, as statute is drafted, you can be out target shooting on your property, something you've done all summer. All of a sudden, you fall into a window. If you're not a deer hunter and if you're not a permit holder, you have no idea you're violating the law. I do not know how 90% of Minnesotans would understand they're violating the law, and they have no intent to do anything wrong. And the conservation officer is under no obligation to sort of defer to the situation and say, you didn't intend to do anything wrong. And so I would like to have that conversation going forward. And if we put in the word must, they will be much more likely to come to the table and have the conversation about how we resolve this.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Benson. Mr. Knopf wants to get a little technical on us here. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I think what you'd want to do is delete may be and insert is. Rather than must be, so we're defining the penalty for the first offense, so it is punishable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will follow Mr. Knopf's advice and make that my amendment.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Going back to Senator Schmidt, Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, and thank you, Senator Benson, for that description, because that's exactly the type of situation that the language that's in the bill would allow us to deal with. We do use discretion on these cases. However, the law that is there was implemented specifically to reduce the desire of people possibly shooting on their property. All of a sudden, they see a deer and they shoot it within that five-day period. We do use discretion as much as possible, but if someone's shooting on their property, 5 days before the season to harass your neighbor so there's no deer for him to hunt the next morning, that would be a different story. We would want to issue that person a citation. So now you're taking away a tool that we have with discretion. You're making it a one-size-fits-all solution based on your constituents' concerns, which I understand completely, but we don't have anything to stop people who are blatantly violating the law knowing that it's just a warning. So I agree we can have another discussion on this and more discussions as this moves forward, but just changing this law right now, or this language right now, until we have a solution that the department supports, obviously, we're not going to support.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, the language that was moved to lay on the table as part of this bill required that the first offense, the first violation be a warning. And I was told by the department that they would come and talk to me and we'd work out a reasonable solution, and nothing happened. And so I would appreciate the committee's deference to put in the more forceful language. I am more than happy to have a conversation. I will support Senator Schmidt's bill going out of this committee and work on this without adding burden to Senator Schmidt so that it's ready for judiciary, which is going to be a tough fight. And I don't want to hang up this bill over this small word, but I would like to have a conversation about how we give conservation officers the ability in a situation where they assess that someone is doing something wrong, they can issue a violation. But if someone does not intend to do anything wrong, the conservation officer shouldn't have the power to find them. It's a significant citation, and I would have liked to have had that conversation before we got to this moment, but the bill came to me today as is, and I didn't have the opportunity to have that conversation.
Senator Schmidt, Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I apologize. I thought that some language, alternative language, was sent to you and that you had received that. So I will circle back and we'll get that meeting set up, because it was my understanding that they did communicate back with you and send you some alternative language. So we'll touch base offline on that.
So there's an amendment in front of this group that says they want to, Senator Benson would like to change the maybe to is.
Senator Schmidt.
I guess, Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, I'd offer you this. I'll put an author's amendment together for judiciary that will include your language. And if we're not at a point where you're satisfied with our conversations with DNR, we'll keep that in there. If we have a happy resolution to those conversations, we'll remove that amendment.
Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Schmidt, you can't do an author's amendment except at your first stop, so you would have to be able to explain
that's
the change.
That's a good point.
And so I think it might be easier to explain the change from firm language to softened up language than to try to move it up would be my point in changing the language to stronger language.
So, Senator Benson, Mr. Knopf, do you want to just read that so we're all understanding what Senator Benson is saying in her amendment?
Mr. Chair, on page 12, line 1, delete may be and insert is.
Having said that, Senator Benson moves the take out maybe and add is. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Can I get a division on this?
I just did a division.
You did. Thank you. Senator Brown, that's good. Can I get the ayes, please? And the noes. We have 5-5.
Mr. Chair, the motion dies on a tie.
Thank you. Dies on a tie.
But Senator Benson and Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to continue the conversation and try to work this out for you.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, I appreciate that. I don't think the conversation I need to have is with you. I think you and I have an understanding. So thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Senator Schmidt, anything else?
Well, thank you for the thorough discussion today. We appreciate that. And I guess with that said, I would make a motion to move this bill as amended for passage, recommended to pass to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you. Senator Schmidt moves Senate file number 1303 be moved and sent to as amended and sent to Judiciary. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. We will recess until 4:30. We'll be back in this room. Same bat room. Not the same bat time.
Are you sure you didn't want something about muskies in here yet?